This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions come to us via radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. And I'm with Layla Mutin, who is our nutritionist in residence, as usual.
That's me.
Right. Then we wouldn't call it Q&A with Layla. We'd call it Q&A with Marianne or with Stephanie. So Layla's an integral part of this, and we have a bunch of questions, but first I'd like to review a couple of news stories, as we sometimes do at the top of these Q&A sessions. I was pleased to see news in the New York Times. USA Triathlon embraces CBD.
Wow!
So CBD, you know, because in sports, CBD is controversial because it is... a marker for marijuana use.
Yeah.
And so, according to WADA, the World Anti-Doping Association, they don't want their athletes smoking pot. So, a lot of professional athletes, a lot of, NCAA, I think, and college athletes, they're, you know, sometimes tested for doping substances and performance-enhancing drugs, PEDs. And so... CBD was a little bit in the shadows among my athletes anyway. You know, my athletes were saying, you know, I have to really be careful because we sometimes get randomly tested and I don't want to test positive. Well, this is a limited opening up to CBD. And I'm pleased to see it in the sport that I enjoy, which is triathlon. That means I won't be disqualified from triathlon.
Great.
I've never been tested. I'm just not good enough to be, you know, at that high professional level where they test me for, you know, they go, yeah, that performance is pretty good, but you probably aren't taking a performance enhancing drug. Now, if I did like a record setting pace at the age of, pushing 70, they'd say, well, yeah, we're going to test you for performance enhancing drugs. But I'm kind of insulted. They never even wanted to test me. This is, a limited opening for CBD. It does not mean that in all realms of professional sports and amateur competition that CBD has now gained acceptance. But it's a little nose under the tent for what I consider a harmless and innocuous substance. I think for athletes, CBD is not necessarily performance enhancing, but it might help with
recovery,
you know, like a little less soreness, maybe recovery from injuries. Maybe you have, you know, some pain
syndromes,
you could use like a topical, you know, rub it into your muscles and that has a soothing effect. Also for sleep, you know, say, you know, you're going to a competition in Switzerland or something like that and you're jet lagged and you take some CBD the night before the event so that you can assure yourself of a good night's sleep. That could be an appropriate use of CBD for athletes, but I don't really see how it messes things up. I will say this, in answer to questions people have, they say, well, if I take this, will I come up positive on a drug test? And the answer is maybe, theoretically, yes. And in fact, just for fun, one of my patients who really has benefited from CBD, it has helped him with stress eating, and it's helped him with sleep. And he says he's, you know, it's really changed his life. He said, just for the heck of it, he just bought one of those drug testing kits, you know, that sometimes parents test their kids. He says, you know, like whatever it cost, I don't know, $30-$40 or something. I don't know. He bought it at a, you know, over the counter at a drugstore. And he tested himself. became a positive for cannabinoids.
Wow.
Even though there's no THC, it registered for the CBD.
Okay.
So, you know, that could create some confusion.
Yeah.
You know, like if a cop or a fireman is taking this for legitimate reasons, you know,
sure.
for stress, anxiety, for sleep.
A pilot.
You know, a pilot. Oh, forget about it. You
forget
know?
About it.
And
train conductor.
There really has to be a lot of research, I think, mm-hmm. before, you know, I think CBD is safe. I think it's an issue of liability.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, if a train crashes and the guy tests positive for CBD, you know, was it the CBD?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
There has to be more specific tests.
In other words, selecting for THC and not for CBD.
Exactly.
But I think there's always a tiny amount of THC.
Yeah. How can they completely make sure?
Right. It's like 99.9%.
Yeah. It's like when you decaf coffee.
I mean,
still
5% I've taken CBD. It's nothing like, and I, you know.
Yeah.
I do have a basis for comparison. You know, having gone to college in the 1970s. You know, that taking CBD is not at all like that.
Not at all like that.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
It's not going to turn you into Cheech and Chong.
Yeah.
You know, in
I've never tried CBD myself. So
oh, seriously?
No, I've not had a reason. You know,
okay, so wait a minute. You have no sleep problems.
I don't.
You're never anxious.
Oh, I'm not never anxious, but you know, I kind of breathe through. I wouldn't call myself an anxious person. Okay. I become less anxious as I've gotten older, which is very interesting.
Okay.
I really thought it would go the other way.
Yeah, I think, you know.
Because I was more anxious as a young adult.
I think
there's a lot of angst.
There's a maturation thing. You know, I think there really is
the unimportant stuff falls away.
Yeah. There's a psychological trend, I think, towards, you know, high levels of anxiety among teens and 20 somethings.
Mm-hmm. That could have been me then.
And then things get better. And it has to do with brain maturation. It has to do with experience. It also has to do with learning a little bit how to tune your body, you know, because stuff I did to my body when I was, an adolescent and a 20-something, mm-hmm. you know, poor diet. I smoked cigarettes for a couple of years in college, mm-hmm. Did a lot of, you know, funny stuff with drugs. Does that mean I'm disqualified from the presidency? No, I guess not. No more. No. Because I was thinking of making a run.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
poor diet. And not a nary a supplement. And, oh, by the way, here's a key fact.
Mm.
I did not eat fish until I was in my late teens and 20s. So
wow.
I must have had a terrible ascension.
You didn't like seafood.
I was a very finicky eater.
Okay.
And so I got I had no essential fatty acids.
Mm.
So I was and then for a while I was a vegan,
mm-hmm.
which could play havoc with your essential fatty acid
That's
levels.
True.
So, you know, I don't know, a general trend towards a little more psychological balance and contentment as people reach middle age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then of course you're faced with other adversity as you get older, you know, physical challenges and disabilities and diseases and mm-hmm. you know, people dying around you and blah, 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 you know, and the economic exigencies of maybe not being able to afford retirement. There's a lot of stresses on older people,
right?
But somehow they may be more balanced to broach
mm-hmm.
that. So I have to say that, you know, I joke with patients. Sometimes patients say what you say. They'll say, well, I don't particularly need CBD. I'm fine. I go, whoa, you are the exception in this practice because anxiety is rife among, you know, patients in New York that we see.
Sure, that's true. But we're also talking about serious medical conditions and absolute, you know, the psychological stress, even the emotional trauma that can arise from something like that. That could be hard.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And one more.
Yeah.
And this is a
mm-hmm.
fun study.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the title and a lot of people are going to go, huh? It's entitled Translocation of a Gut Pathobiont Drives Autoimmunity in Mice and Humans.
Oh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let's translate that to common parlance.
Uh-huh.
This we've been saying this for a long time, is that what happens in the gut doesn't stay in the gut. And I'm
it's not vagus, people.
Right. And although it may have something to do with the vagus nerve.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which I haven't the vaguest idea
well played,
what it does. But it, so the idea being, and this is a notion that is now really ensconced in mm-hmm. integrative medicine, is that people with autoimmune disorders, mm-hmm. Hashimoto's thyroiditis,
yes.
and rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, it starts in the gut, mm-hmm. and it has to do with leaky gut syndrome,
okay.
the ability of bacteria to translocate, mm-hmm. that's a word in this title of the study in Science,
yes.
a prestigious journal, Science, translocation of a gut pathobiont. Well, a patho is, means a bad player.
Right.
And they actually isolated this particular bacteria mm-hmm. that seems to be a trigger, and it doesn't stay in the gut. It may translocate. It may go into the systemic circulation. It may be recognized as an intruder and set up an immune response, which
yeah.
is destructive to target organs outside the gut.
Yes.
Such as could be the thyroid. It could be the joints. It could be the arteries in vasculitis. It could be anything. It could be the skin in skin conditions.
Yeah.
It could be the eye in autoimmune eye conditions. And on it goes. So this kind of vindicates this notion of leaky gut syndrome.
Yeah.
And it also vindicates the notion that we can optimize our health by cultivating a healthy microbiome.
Yes, absolutely.
So
gut.
So a very mm-hmm. profound study. You know, I think I posted on Facebook and a couple of people got it. There were a couple of shares. I'm not sure that everybody mm-hmm. Realized its implications, mm-hmm. but
mm-hmm. interesting.
You know, more and more, it's some of the things that we've sort of believed, and they said, "Well, that's like
back when
holistic." You know, that sort of
15 years ago, they would have laughed.
Yeah, that's like naturopathic.
Yeah.
Medicine, these are sort of, you know, superstitious.
There's no leaky gut.
Yeah. If you get right. like shot by an AK-47 in the abdomen, you've got a leaky
you've
gut.
You've got a leaky gut.
Right. But short of that, there's no such thing as
right.
a leaky gut. Right.
Right. And no such thing as candida.
Okay.
Unless you have AIDS.
Right.
And have.
But
you know,
might have, then we have accounts of Otto Brewery syndrome and we have
yeah.
these, you know,
yeah.
like, okay. So anyway, mm-hmm. A lot of these concepts that we, you know, sort of, advanced decades ago are now being validated by conventional science. Okay, so enough self-congratulatory.
Oh, gosh. All right, well, on to our first question.
That's why I need to take CBD, because it's so it's so anxiety-provoking to be
yeah.
an integrative doctor.
That's more excitement than anxiety, Dr.
Right, right.
But anyway, this comes from Nicole. Hello, I'm a new listener this past year, and I love the show. I tell all my family and friends, constantly sending everyone podcasts that I think would be in their interest. I'm a 37-year-old woman.
Her check is in the mail.
Her check is in the mail.
Right.
Thank you, Nicole. I'm a 37-year-old woman and developed vertigo in the past year. I have episodes for days or weeks. How can I prevent the episodes? And if I do have an episode, how can I shorten the time? Why are the episodes worse at night? That gives me a clue. It probably does you too.
Okay, 37?
She's 37.
Okay.
In very good health.
Okay, they're worse at night.
Good. And it's worse at night. She's of average height, weight. She exercises. She takes multivitamins, vitamin C, magnesium, D, all the right stuff.
Yeah.
She developed two herniated discs in her cervical spine last December, and that's when the vertigo started.
Chiropractors would go hog wild on that because...
Wow.
There really is thought to be a relationship between the cranial nerves
okay.
and vertigo. So that
okay.
Neck mm-hmm. dysfunction,
yeah.
and don't ask me, I'm not an expert on this, but a chiropractor could explain it,
right.
Is that there is a chiropractic approach to this. There's also, you know, craniosacral kinds
yeah.
of manipulations that could be helpful.
That.
So that's the structural approach to
yeah.
that.
So Nicole did not have the surgery. She completed therapy, and she still does therapy on her own at home. So if that started then, when she said her vertigo is worse at night, I was thinking of calcium crystals and the,
okay, the lying down,
the benign position.
Well, you know, an ENT can do the analysis and the mm-hmm. testing to see if there's crystals floating around. Then there's something called an Epley maneuver,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if they still do that, but that mm-hmm. is sometimes helpful for people with crystals. But she's relatively young.
Yeah.
She may have issues with ups and downs of blood sugar that could exacerbate things. You know, CBD has a calmative effect in terms of vertigo. Some people get, you know, some partial relief from vertigo through CBD.
High amounts of vitamin B6.
Acupuncture
but
can be helpful.
But I don't like to recommend on a podcast how much vitamin B6. It would be a lot.
Ginger
you
is
have a, to be monitored,
right.
really, for that.
Yeah, B6, paradoxically, can also, at very high doses, if taken in isolation without other B vitamins, can cause balance issues. So it's a two-edged sword with B6.
Yeah. Too low and too much is
vertigo is a tough problem.
Yeah.
The world's expert on vertigo, and I get sometimes people showing up at the office, I'm here to see you about vertigo, and I go, you're here to see Dr. Ronald Hoffman? And they go, yeah, you're the world's expert on vertigo. And I go, no, that's an ear, nose, and throat doctor named Dr. Ronald Hoffman. He's
also in New York.
He's a few blocks uptown or downtown. They make a mistake and they come. But you know, because there have been some advances in the treatment of vertigo, but it's a tough problem. And the workup, you know, involves an MRI and involves you know, imaging sometimes and testing to you know, balance testing. There's also something called vestibular rehabilitation, which was actually developed at least in part by my namesake, Dr. I think he's Ronald A. Hoffman, and he's getting along in years a little bit. I'm not sure that he's still he is in practice, but you know, he may be sort of professor emeritus these days.
The other thing, besides, unless it's a, you know, if it happens to be a coincidence that her vertigo started at the time of the disc problems, the other thing to look for, if she's having bouts of them, would it be Meniere's syndrome?
Well, okay.
A way to know that
is Meniere's syndrome is a little bit of a wastebasket syndrome.
Right, but that's autoimmune in nature. It would cause some a lot of ringing in the ear that may result in some deafness. A lot of nausea, vomiting, if it's that bad. But this doesn't sound like that. But again, I'm not a doctor. I can't diagnose.
Right.
But I would throw that out there to say, go investigate that with your doctor.
There's some, you know, we talk about ear problems, and we've talked a little bit about Meniere's. A promising treatment might be nicotinamide riboside at high doses, because it seems to support the nerves. Alpha lipoic acid could also be plausible for supporting nerve function. But you know, that's a little bit of a, I think we have to sort of subdivide this into different subtypes of vertigo. You know, what is it caused by?
Could be viral in nature. That could take a few months to clear up. Could be due to a car accident. Some whiplash may cause some vertigo syndrome or a feeling of, not necessarily vertigo, which is spinning. There's 75 ways to be dizzy.
Right.
It could be
a key with vertigo is to, it is very much associated with anxiety.
And the vertigo can make you anxious.
And it's a vicious cycle. So, you know, centering and calming exercises, maybe, you know, meditation or biofeedback.
A little self-disclosure. This was about, in the mid-1990s, I developed vertigo. And for no good reason, I woke up to the bed turning over.
Literally, my
bed was turning over.
That's the way it starts sometimes. It's a trigger by a virus, perhaps.
And that's actually how it was diagnosed. It was triggered by a virus. I had to wait it out. And things like that. And it was recommended, besides taking meclizine, Which is Dramamine and your bone.
But that's a knockout pill.
Doesn't that knock you out?
Especially
having to take it in the morning.
Very drowsy.
Just to get going, you know. But after a time, I was able to go on to vitamin B6 for a while and then come off the meclizine. But they said, it's viral in nature. You have to wait it out. And it was recommended to do Tai Chi.
Oh, wow. For balance.
So I did Tai Chi, to calm myself down.
Yes.
Because another part of the therapy was, I had to take a Xanax or a Valium.
Yes.
And I didn't want to.
Right.
But my ENT talked me into taking it just at night to go to bed. I said, okay, fine. But I
because
didn't
it's
want to wake
alarming.
Up in the morning and
it's
take
very,
a Valium.
It's very alarming and disconcerting.
We need to calm down the inner ear. That's the reason for taking it.
Yeah. So it's just to...
Tai Chi is like taking a Valium, may I say.
Okay.
I got into Tai Chi for a while and I said, wow.
Okay.
You ever see that episode of Bugs Bunny? Where he's kind of walking in the ether.
That's like Tai Chi.
Kind of, it's like Tai Chi. But honestly, afterwards, it was just amazing. I said, wow, you can't get me to speed up to make the light to cross the street if you paid me right now.
So, you know, that episode of Vertigo was kind of a gift to you in a way, because
it
pushed you to undertake some things that in your busy life you wouldn't have ordinarily explored.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what I feel. We have like a little, you know, health challenge or adversity. It's an exploration, and it first teaches me empathy. But it also, you know, when I finally figure out a workaround, it, you know, increases my ability to advise patients.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go on to the next question here from John. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I regularly rinse my mouth with salt water to kill plaque-causing germs and keep my gums healthy. Should I be concerned that the salt may damage my beneficial oral microbiome?
Well, you know, the thought here is, you know, are you, when you rinse your mouth with salt, what are you doing? And you maybe, you're not really killing your bacteria.
It's good for soothing a sore throat. Soothing.
Right.
I don't know that it has sort of
a drawing effect. And, you know, it may suppress the overgrowth of certain bacteria. It's not going to kill everything in your mouth.
Yeah.
So hopefully it will selectively suppress the bad stuff without eradicating the good stuff. I mean, I can't, unless it's like a very, very salty solution, I can't imagine it, you know, hurting your flora.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that people do sometimes is they do
oil pulling.
Oil pulling, yeah.
20 minutes with coconut oil.
Okay.
That's a long time. If you could go that long without swallowing, that's really something. It's almost like you have to go from cheek to cheek. Like
that. Yeah, like that, right, yeah. But, you know, it's like you get this big wad of spit in your mouth because you're looking for a spittoon.
Yes.
You know, like in the old westerns, like a saloon.
You have to spit that out in the trash, not into your sink. You don't want fat or grease, you know, that kind of thing going down into your plumbing.
Okay.
Because that can cause a blockage later on, unless you're pouring a lot of Dawn in there or something.
That's a handy housekeeping tip.
Your plumber would hate you if you're pouring your bacon grease or your fat down the drain.
Okay.
You want to put that in the garbage. Same with the oil in your mouth if you're doing oil pulling.
Because it's warm in your mouth and it's liquid, and then it cools down.
It's going to cool down in your pipes.
In your pipes.
The worst thing to take is alcohol-based mouthwash.
Yeah, yeah. The things that are really designed to kill bacteria. Not only alcohol-based, but they also have
triclosan,
which is now thought to be harmful, carcinogenic, creates antibiotic resistance.
Still in hand soap.
And also kills your nitric oxide production from dietary nitrates.
Right.
It interferes with that.
That, because your microbiome has everything to do with the production of the nitric oxide. Mm-hmm. So you could be causing high blood pressure by using an alcohol-based mouthwash.
Yeah.
Go figure. Who would ever put that together?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing stuff.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So, John, salt water is probably innocuous.
Yeah. You know, it's soothing.
I guess
what it does do, I think it's recommended for people who have mild infections or bleeding gums. It's soothing.
CoQ10 is great for bleeding gums.
It has a drawing effect.
Gums.
You know, so it will sort of draw the infection out. That's what salt does. So, you know, if you have a mouth sore or something, you know, swish around some salt, especially iodized salt, because iodine has the property of being antibacterial.
Yeah, because a lot of people are opting for sea salt and other things. And
no iodine.
There's really no iodine.
No, it's actually sea salt has a little iodine, but it's the...
Because it's from the sea.
But the Himalayan salt.
Yeah.
Okay, when was the last time the Himalayans were underwater?
No.
No.
No. So you need a little... actually have both. We have regular iodized salt, and we have the
Himalayan salt's pretty.
Sea salt.
Pretty.
And we have the Himalayan and so forth and so on, Good idea.
I was at a restaurant the other night where they had like a little beautiful wooden box that was a salt flight. It had the white salt, it had the gray salt, and it had the pink salt.
Wow.
So and then it's a little tiny spoon.
A salt
that you could put on your, you know, food, you know.
Lovely.
Yeah,
lovely.
It was beautiful.
As opposed to a whiskey flight or a craft beer flight.
Exactly.
Or something like that, a salt flight. All right, John, thank you for that very thoughtful question.
Okay, so we reached the limits of our time allocation for part one. We divide our podcast into two parts. And give us a preview of what we're going to tackle in part two, Layla.
I had a heart attack 2 years ago. Would nitric oxide be beneficial for me?
Okay. Good question. That's a high-hanging curveball that we can we can hit right out of the park. You know that World Series on my mind.
Oh, right.
Yeah, my Yankees kind of whiffed, but, you know, it's that time of year.
Yeah. It's so fun, baseball. It's,
yeah, yeah. Even vicariously when it's somebody else's team. So let's pause, and then when we return, we're going to tackle some more questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. Also, check out drhoffman.com for more great content. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla.